Every individual must learn what it means to be human, and this understanding begins developing in early childhood. What matters most for our youngest children is how we are with them, how we show them what kindness, empathy, and respect look like. They are following their leaders. Welcome to the Leading for Children podcast. We're excited you're here with us today as we explore number 10 of the 11 simple rules to create thriving communities for children, exploratory. I'm Judy Jablon, founder and strategic advisor at Leading for Children. Joining me in this conversation are my dear friends and colleagues, Gretchen Henderson and Nicole Parks. Nicole?
Thanks, Judy. Hello, everyone. My name is Nicole Parks, and I am the executive director at Leading for Children, and a mom and a wife and aunt to many nieces and nephews. And I'll pass it to our dear friend, Gretchen.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm Gretchen Henderson. I'm Leading for Children's former chief of staff. I'm a mom of two. I'm a passionate knitter, a spinner, a quilter. And as you can probably tell if you're watching on YouTube, I'm a houseplant enthusiast.
Thanks so much for those introductions. I think it's going to be fantastic today to talk about exploratory with the two of you, since we explored being a leadership team together, we explored building an organization together, and we've watched each other closely as we've explored all kinds of different aspects of our lives over the last many years that we've been friends and colleagues. So let's start off with thinking about what exploratory means to us. Think about, you know, what comes to mind, words and phrases. Who would like to start us off?
I'll start. When I think about exploratory, I think about curiosity. The big phrase for me is what if. I think about experiments, creativity, hands-on, trial and error, and then especially I think with a little bit of risk-taking.
Thank you for that, Gretchen. I'll go. When I think about exploratory, I think about liberation. Like, there are no rules if I'm just exploring, where if I'm trying to find the answer, it somehow feels like there's a certain path I must take. But if I allow myself to just imagine what could be, then there feels like there aren't rules set in place that stops me from stretching beyond what I normally would. And so I think that is probably why I lean into exploration so much. And I'll pass it to you, Judy.
Thanks for that, Gretchen and Nicole. It's interesting. I know typically we say what we were thinking before the question got asked. But as I listened to both of you, I thought about how when I first started teaching at Bank Street, I was introduced to the idea of creating opportunities for children to explore and be researchers. And I thought about how much I hated doing research as a student, because in contrast to what you said, Nicole, it felt like it had so many rules. And Gretchen, in contrast to what you said, it never felt like trial and error. It felt like I was supposed to get it right. And so I think it was really when I first began teaching and I discovered the idea of the curiosity and passion that comes with trial and error and sort of turning over one stone only to discover there's another stone to turn over. So when I think of exploration, I too think about, I don't really know where this is going to go, but boy, is it cool to do it. Other thoughts before we think about how exploratory learning has enriched us?
I also think about exploratory learning as being really active. You know, I'm not receiving the information. I am engaged hands-on in doing something.
It's interesting. Yesterday, I had lunch with another colleague of ours, Selena, and she was talking about hobbies that are passive and hobbies that are active. And that whether you're in a receiving mode, like reading or watching movies, or whether you're in a creating mode, like weaving or painting or, you know, jewelry making. And I had never thought about exploration in terms of that active engagement as opposed to just receiving. So that's an interesting thing for me this week, actually.
That's funny you should say that, Judy. I was sharing with someone that one of my all-time favorite explorative activities really is observing people. I just love to observe people and notice. And I was talking to someone at a conference about that, and they were like, well, is that really learning? Is that really exploring? And I said, for me, very much so. Even if I'm just sitting there quiet, my mind is moving so fast and I am building so many stories in my head. So although my body is still in a lot of those places, I feel very active on the inside. And so listening to you describe that kind of helped me to understand why I felt that way.
You know, I was a little stuck yesterday with her comment, and I'm thinking about how when I read, it is exploratory for me because I'm very much like imagining these characters and kind of bringing them to life and making connections between the characters in the book and my own experiences. So I think this, the whole idea of what's active, does it, you know, is your mind active or are your hands active? So that's an interesting query for us as we think about exploratory. Should we think about ways that exploratory learning has enriched our lives? Who'd like to start us off?
I can start. I think, again, it kind of goes back to liberation. As a child, I very much grew up in a community where, although children were cared for and loved, they were also seen as people who should maybe be seen, but not necessarily heard. Talking, exploring, asking questions, those are very much adult-like things. And for me, that was just not the case. I always had questions. I always wanted to find out why. I always wanted to see what was next, because surely that answer you gave wasn't finite. And so I think one of the ways exploratory has enriched my life is that it made me comfortable being a learner. It made me comfortable investigating. It made me comfortable to trust myself that I can keep going until my curiosity is satisfied versus going until I felt I had the answer that whoever I was doing this with or for was looking for, or even if I felt like, well, okay, nobody else is interested in this. And so it really did give me the freedom, and I even have that freedom now to where I'll watch the same show over and over again. And my family often laugh and they go, well, how can that still pique your interest? And I said, because each time I'm looking at it through a different lens. You know, the first time, maybe I'm just watching, but you know, I love to watch Matlock. I said, and one of my favorite things to do now is to watch it and see, can I figure out when he figured out the answer? And so it just is this freedom to me, I guess, to explore whether you have a lot of new things around you, because I didn't have access to a lot of new things, or if I was in the same space and environment and having to explore the same things over and over again. And so it's enriched me into where I feel like I can be a thinker, a learner, an investigator, no matter where I am. I can figure out a way to do it.
Thanks for that, Nicole. I'm seeing a link there between the way you're sharing about how watching a TV show can be exploratory, the way that Judy was talking about reading, things that we might perceive as being more passive. For me, I think one of the biggest ways that exploratory learning experiences have enriched my life is that they make me actually learn the thing, in that sometimes I think when I read about something or someone tells me how to do something, I go, and it's like, it's there and then it's gone, you know? And when I actually try something and see what happens and then see it through and try something else, by the time, you know, I've reached success on whatever it is, it's stuck, you know? So for me, it's like exploratory learning experiences are much more sticky in my memory. And the other big thing I find about them is that they can just be thrilling, you know, or fun. Like exploratory learning to me is just fun.
I think that in my life, the first thing that came into my mind when I saw the question in our podcast outline, that when I was young and I learned to dance, for me, dancing was exploratory because, you know, no one, I did it out of my circle, you know, like no one in my family was doing it. I wasn't with kids in my classroom. It was my own experience. And so I think that in some way, Nicole connects to that idea of freedom, that I felt very free in this environment. I also had an exemplary teacher who in no way made us feel constrained. But as we got to be young teenagers, she introduced us to these pantomimes where she would give us a plot, basically like Peter and the Wolf, or, you know, something that was like a famous story. And we'd choose what role we wanted to play. And she'd put on Tchaikovsky and we'd start making it up. And, you know, we sort of choreographed it as a group by messing around. And I think that when you described comfort in learning, Nicole, I think I learned through that process of exploration so much about my abilities as a dancer, but also my abilities as a person and just kind of what could come out of my head. And I feel like this idea of there wasn't a right way. There was what you described again. I wrote it down. You said, my curiosity is satisfied. And like she would say to us, we're done when you guys feel like we have a ballet. And so we weren't following steps or doing anything. We were practicing it from our own invention. And I think that that was an invaluable gift to me as a young person in terms of kind of discovering a way to learn that was so deeply exploratory. And it definitely has enriched my life and affected so much about who I am and what I do. I guess I kind of a little bit talked about that feeling of being excited, stretched, and connected in my story. Do either of you have an example of a particular exploratory learning experience where, you know, you got really sparked, really ignited?
I do. So early in the pandemic, I discovered a love for houseplants. And one of the first things that I brought into the house was a fiddle leaf fig. And they are notoriously finicky plants. Some people say if you look at them wrong, they will drop all their leaves. So I was proud that mine was thriving, but it was just growing up as one trunk. And the ones that I was admiring in these, you know, Instagram posts or whatever looked like trees with multiple branches, you know, and I was like, what do I need to do to make that happen? And so I had read, I'd seen things online, and I understood there were like three different ways that you could promote branching. And so one of them is to pinch, you know, the growth point at the top. Another one is to cut a notch into the side of the trunk, or the third and most aggressive thing is you just chop the trunk off, you know, at the height that you want the branching to occur. And that was kind of terrifying to me because that was basically cutting off all of the growth that I had had and was so proud of in the year that I'd had this tree. So first I had a similar tree, a ficus, and I'm like, let me see what happens if I pinch off the growth point on this one. And I did. And I waited and watched. And it kind of just made the trunk seem to go a little wonky to the side. And so that was not really the desired outcome. So one day in watering, I was like, I'll try notching this trunk, which really means cutting like a wedge, you know, damaging the side of the trunk of your tree, hoping that that is going to actually spur growth. So I cut this big notch into the side of my trunk. And maybe I just wasn't aggressive enough, but nothing happened. And so finally I said, well, I'll wait till spring when it's supposed to be a good time to stimulate growth. And then I'm just going to do it. And one day I just came in and I just went at like 4 feet tall. I literally cut off like all of the growth that the tree had had in the time I've had it. And then I basically couldn't look at her. I call her for like 2 weeks because I was like, what if, you know, what have I done? And sure enough, when I looked again, I could see these tiny green like growth points all around the trunk. And I took pictures and sent them to my kids. And I was like, I think I did it, you know? And now my tree has like 5 new branches. And it's thrilling that it worked. And it's so interesting for me to see where new growth happens and like what happens if, you know? And so it was just absolutely one of those small things in life that was really quite thrilling and satisfying for me.
Gretchen, what's so powerful in your story is you talked at the beginning about trial and error. Mm-hmm. And it's such an exemplary example of trial and error and your persistence, your willingness to feel free enough, comfortable enough to say, oh, I didn't fail. But I have another try. I get to try it again. I get to try it again.
And really for me, risk-taking, you know, that was my precious plant and I was taking a big chance. I also then took the parts I cut off and put them in water to see if they would root. And sure enough, I do have roots now. And so now I am apparently growing new fiddleleaf fig trees, which I will have to find homes for.
Nicole, what about you?
I think the one that I think about the most is, and maybe because it was solving a problem, because I love to do that, but I can remember being a young toddler teacher and I had a student that just bit everything and everyone, big and small. It didn't matter, you know, it so didn't matter. And really trying to understand why, because I just felt like she's telling us something. And, you know, at that time I begged the director and begged the families in the classroom, please, we don't want to dismiss her. Please just, we will figure it out. And so I remember doing all the things, the biting logs, you know, what time, what was happening, you know, all of the, you know, we blow kisses, reading the little books, you know, teeth are for eating and all the things, and none of it was working. And I'm like, well, goodness, she bit me while I was reading the book. Nothing. Nothing is working. But she was such a sweet girl, and I just knew. And so one day we had this practice that when families came in, we would automatically either be on our knees or sitting on our bottoms, but we would be right there to look that toddler in the eye and greet them and good morning. And so I'm sitting there and she's my best friend because I don't want her to bite anyone. So she's kind of sitting on my lap with my arm around her because I love her, but also so I can quickly get her back if she goes to bite one of her friends. And sure enough, someone puts her son over and I go, hi, and she goes to bite. And then I kind of pull her back. And then when her friend came over, she just gently grabbed his hand like I would grab the children's hand and kind of rubbed it. And I looked and I went, oh my gosh, she is speaking and talking to us when she's biting us. And that parent of the son is kind of like, yeah, right. And I'm like, no, I really think she is. And so what I started to do is when someone would come in, I would go say hi. And she would go hi. And I'm like, give a hug. She'd give a hug. And so I noticed she started doing that a lot during the day. Like she'd go up to her friends and she'd go, hi. And then she'd give a hug. And so the biting started to dissipate. And then we introduced some different words that she could use too. But still, I feel so much joy and excitement from that to this day that A, I stuck in there and explored. And most importantly, that through that exploration and belief that something was there that I needed to see, that I saw something that frankly I'd never seen in my practice and hadn't since. I've seen children bite for many reasons. I had never seen one bite, just that was that way of talking, period. And so that story always sticks with me. And I try to encourage other people when they're working with toddlers that there is a reason and you can figure it out. And she's an attorney now, so she's doing great in life.
Nicole, I'm going to take a risk that I can draw some lines. You know, when we first started talking about exploratory, you said you see, you know, you associate it with liberation. There are no rules. Then you talked later about kind of watching a TV show again and looking with fresh eyes and, you know, seeing something new. And I think your story about that child, as well as your newsletter this month, is so much about an exploratory, curious mind doesn't see a fixed end and persists. And Gretchen, you talked about trial and error, and then you described the excitement that you had of wanting to share, you know, the little growth spurts with your kids because you persisted. And I think that one of the questions is kind of how does curiosity and persistence with the things we like to explore affect other really important characteristics that make us strong leaders in our communities, with our families, with children as educators, you know, professionally, feelings of self-efficacy, feelings of resilience. They were implicit in these stories that we've all shared. Let's just think a little bit, though, about both how curiosity and persistence, when we make that possible for ourselves and for others, how it impacts self-efficacy, resilience, confidence.
When I think about what the persistence towards my hobbies has done for me, one thing really stands out, which is that I've always been a person who is sort of like, I'd rather be done than perfect, you know, and I like to do things quickly. And I don't really like making mistakes. And of all my hobbies, knitting is my first love and my passion. I knit every day, and I've been knitting since I was a child. And it is a super, it takes a long time to make a garment, even if you are a really experienced knitter. Days and days and days, you know, of knitting. And sometimes it can happen that a person could knit, say, 5-10 inches of the body of a sweater before really allowing the realization to dawn on them that this sweater is either way too large or way too small for the body that it was actually intended to fit. Or even worse, you're making a beautiful cabled sweater and you look down and you go, oh, I crossed the cable the wrong way, you know, 5 inches ago. And basically, it's like your choices in this are to keep going, ignore, you know, see the cable crossed wrong as a design element instead of a flaw, which can be the fine and great answer. But knitting yourself a sweater that is way too big or way too small is really never going to lead to a satisfactory result, you know? And basically, one time I had this interaction with my husband that I probably have shared before because it had a lot of impact on me, which was I was sitting there saying, I have to tear this whole thing out, super frustrated, starting to rip out inches and inches, like days of knitting. And he kind of cracked at me something like, well, good thing you like knitting and do it every day anyway, you know? And it irritated me a little bit at the time. But it did really stick with me that I was like, I'm knitting here every night anyway, you know, because I enjoy this craft, apparently. I find it meditative. It's not just about the product, but it's about the process of what I'm doing. And it really did make me rethink going back and starting something over, or the effect of like losing time. And that really, if I want to get to a result that I want, you know, that sometimes it's okay to like make mistakes and start over, you know, or to take more time. And I really do feel that I've seen how that has affected me in other areas when I am trying to get to the end of something, you know, that I'm more able to say to myself, I would rather this be done the way that I'm going to want it to be at the end than it be done now.
So what I'm thinking about is that through our meanderings in this conversation, we've talked about exploratory as first beginning with kind of an attitude or a stance. And then there are skills connected, you know, whether it's the skills of knitting or the skills of observing or the skills of persisting or, you know, whatever it is, but there's this attitude of, I want to figure it out. I want to stay with it. In contrast to, I just want to get done. And I think that when I was a teacher, one of the struggles I had, particularly because I taught kids who were eight, and at eight, kids want to be done. I mean, that's like their middle names. I want to be done. And so you can create for them a really rich exploratory experience, but it's going to take a fair amount of stuff to get the kids who want to be done, not to just be getting it done, if you know what I mean. And so I wonder about this question, and I don't feel like we'll get to the answer today, but resilience and persistence and really being able to cope and be effective is cultivated through experiences of exploring, trying, being curious, tolerating mistakes, and that impatience and lack of persistence and not having bounce back ability is when you're striving always for done and perfect. When we put the idea of exploratory as a simple rule into our book, we believe, of course, that exploratory as a simple rule applies to all of us. We've spent the better part of 30 minutes really rarely referencing kids and really talking about ourselves. As models for children, we've described curiosity, trial and error, investigation, risk-taking, freedom, liberation, engagement, no rules, like all kinds of really great things. I'm wondering if either of you could share an example of how you feel you have in some way modeled or influenced exploration in your role with the children that you've impacted in your families.
Well, sometimes I laugh and I think, not that I model anything perfectly, but I especially look at my 12-year-old daughter, Gracie. Certain things, I feel like because she owns them so much that maybe I model that too well. And when I look at her, I definitely see the elements of resilience. And I see this curiosity and this determination to satisfy that. If she is curious about something, if she wants to try something a different way, she is going to do it. And she's always been that way, whether it was at 18 months climbing two sets of seven concrete stairs because she figured out that she could get up there to see her godmother without fear of what might happen, or even now, if it means, yes, I'm going to put Jell-O in my batter and I don't know what it's going to come out like. I want to do it and I want to see what will happen. And so that's what I'm going to do, even if that means that I can't eat them. And even as much as today, you know, her deciding that she wanted to mix some beverages together, and I was pretty sure that that was not going to land well on her stomach. And I shared that. I said, I think you have a hot mess there if you drink it, and I don't think your stomach will appreciate it. And she said without blinking, how will we know that if I don't drink it?
Go crazy.
So I sat back and I said, okay, here's the deal. If you're willing to accept that your stomach will be upset, I am willing to say, go for it. Explore and see where it goes. And she drank it. And about an hour and a half later, because she was curled up on my couch, she says, mommy. And I go, mm-hmm. And she said, I think that, yeah, that together hurts your stomach. And then off she went. And I was like, mm-hmm. But it's just that determination that she has. If she wants to know something, what might happen, 9 times out of 10, she is still going to explore. And on most days, I'm like, yes. And then on days like today, I'm like, oh, can you just not believe it and take my word for it?
You and she trust each other so much that she could come back to you and tell you you were right. That's huge.
Nicole, it's so interesting to hear that perspective of a child whose natural inclination is to be exploratory. One of my two girls, when she was going to 4-year-old preschool, I had to write a letter describing her to her teachers, which I recently unearthed. And in it, I said, she has a strong need for things to be correct. I said recently, for example, she drew the leg of a ladybug wrong on a painting at the easel and ran from the room saying, it's all ruined. You know, that exploratory is not in her DNA, naturally super cautious child. And so for me as a mom with her, it was a delicate dancing act to really encourage her to try things and just see what happens and be okay with not knowing what the answer was going to be, or with the answer, you know, being something that could be perceived as negative. And so that was always a real challenge for me. You know, it would be easier for me sometimes as a mom to make sure that things were just going to end up okay, you know? And so it would take a big effort on a Tuesday afternoon to go, let's just really try to see what happens and encourage her to take those risks. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. She's a 25-year-old person who still really has to work a little bit at taking risks and just seeing what happens. But she sees the value of that and has that self-awareness.
Those are great, great stories. Thank you so much for that. I think we're coming to the end. Is there anything else that's buzzing in your mind that you'd like to share or raise before we highlight some research and talk about how we've talked about it?
Just what Gretchen, you said, as you described your daughter, I just think the importance as adults that it is a balance. It doesn't mean that you encourage children to go jump off the top of a building, but you do help them cultivate the ability to discern healthy risks. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important that children have that opportunity so that A, they learn how to discern, and then B, that they understand that all risks aren't necessarily ones that you take. However, that there is learning and joy and happiness and all the other things in taking the mitigated risks.
Great summary. So the first piece of research that we really rely on related to exploratory learning experiences are that they're an opportunity to set our own learning path, which is so important in terms of discovering who we are, what we like, what our interests are. And I think that right from the start of this conversation, Nicole, you talked about the liberation, the no rules, such a clear illustration of that research about setting our own learning paths. And then flexibility and open-mindedness, that exploration is what helps us to stay curious. And finally, because we are such firm believers in mutual learning, exploratory learning helps us to be able to learn with and from others. And our stories both illustrated personal pursuits, but also collaborative pursuits, right down to you saying that Jamie commented that you would be doing it anyway and kind of gave you space to say, okay, I'll just keep undoing this. So what we'd like to leave you all, our listeners, with is that both for adults and children, exploratory experiences give us new ways to engage with the world around us and reinforce our sense of agency. At Leading for Children, we are driven by promoting each individual's sense of agency. That's what keeps us open to innovation, discovery, and relationships. And when we commit to having an exploratory mind, looking for opportunities to learn and grow in the things that we're faced with, we become more resilient problem solvers and, again, can nurture healthier relationships. Thank you so much, Nicole and Gretchen, for coming together for this great conversation. And thanks to our community for joining today's conversation about exploratory learning, another of our 11 simple rules. We invite you to check out our website and find our book, 11 Simple Rules, at www.leadingforchildren.org. And if you haven't joined our website subscriber list, please do so that you can receive our newsletter and other materials that we send out regularly. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a joy to be here with you both.
Thanks for joining us, Gretchen. Thanks, Judy. And thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.